Hey, everybody, welcome back to another deep dive.
I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, this one's going to be a really interesting one. I think Black Wall Street.
Yeah.
Now, when most people think of Black Wall Street, they think of the Tulsa Race Massacre of
Right,
1921.
right.
But what's really fascinating is that Tulsa wasn't the only Black Wall Street in America.
Yeah, that's right. And actually, the term Black Wall Street didn't even originate in Tulsa.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so in the early 20th century, you saw all these black communities across the United States that created these really thriving business districts and economies.
Wow.
Yeah, and they were really vibrant hubs of social life and cultural expression, and they were built on these principles of self-sufficiency and economic empowerment. And, I think it's important to note that these communities didn't just emerge out of nowhere.
Right.
There were a lot of factors that led to their creation, including, the legacy of slavery and Jim Crow laws that forced black people to create their own parallel economies.
So it's kind of born out of necessity.
Yeah, exactly. Black people were excluded from the mainstream economy, so they had to create their own opportunities.
Right.
And out of that necessity, something really remarkable was born.
Yeah, so you're basically saying that across the U.S. at this time period, there were these pockets of black excellence.
Yeah, I mean, literally from coast to coast.
Wow.
We often hear about Tulsa, but there are also Black Wall Streets in places like Richmond, Virginia, Durham, North Carolina, Chicago, Atlanta, and many others.
It's really amazing to think about the ingenuity and the resilience of these communities.
Yeah, it really is.
So let's talk about Tulsa.
Okay.
The Greenwood District is probably the most well-known example of a Black Wall Street.
Right. And Greenwood was really a remarkable place.
I've heard that it was like a city within a city.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. They had everything you could possibly need right there in Greenwood. They
Wow.
had doctors, lawyers, teachers, businesses, you name it.
That's incredible.
It was really a testament to the vision and determination of the black community in Tulsa.
So, who is the driving force behind Greenwood?
Well, it all started with a man named O.W. Gurley.
Okay.
He was a black landowner who moved to Tulsa in 1905, and he had this vision of creating a black utopia where black people could thrive and prosper.
So he was kind of like a founding father of Greenwood.
Yeah, you could say that.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, he purchased over 40 acres of land, and he made sure that it was only sold to black people.
Wow, so he really wanted to create a space that was specifically for the black community.
Exactly. And he understood that economic power was key to social progress.
And that's where the double duty dollar comes in.
Right. So the double duty dollar was this philosophy that encouraged black people to spend their money within the black community.
Yeah, I've heard about that.
It was all about keeping those dollars circulating within the community and building black wealth.
So it was kind of like a form of economic solidarity.
Yeah, exactly. And it really worked.
Did it actually have a measurable effect?
It did. Greenwood became incredibly successful.
I can imagine.
By 1921, Greenwood was booming. There were over 100 black-owned businesses there. It was a
Wow.
thriving community.
That's so inspiring.
It really is, but it's important to remember that even though Greenwood was successful, it was still operating within a system that was designed to oppress black people,
Right.
and that system would ultimately lead to its downfall.
Yeah, the Tulsa Race Massacre of 1921.
Exactly.
That was a horrific event that completely destroyed Greenwood.
Yeah, it was one of the worst incidents of racial violence in American history. And you know
Absolutely.
what's even more tragic is that for decades it was largely ignored by mainstream society.
Right, it was kind of swept under the rug.
Exactly. And it's only in recent years that there's been a real effort to acknowledge the massacre and to tell the full story of what happened.
Yeah, it's a story that needs to be told.
Absolutely.
So let's talk about what happened.
Okay, so the massacre was sparked by an incident between a young black man named Dick Rowland and a white woman named Sarah Page.
I've heard different accounts of what happened.
Yeah, the details are still a bit murky, but basically there was an altercation between them, and Rowland was accused of assaulting Page.
Okay.
Now, whether or not the assault actually happened is still debated, but regardless, the accusation quickly spread throughout the white community, and it sparked a wave of outrage.
And this outrage quickly turned into violence.
Yeah, a white mob descended upon Greenwood armed with guns and torches.
It was a full-scale attack.
They looted and burned businesses and homes, and they shot and killed black residents indiscriminately.
It's hard to even imagine the terror that those people must have felt.
Yeah, it was a truly horrific event.
And the aftermath was devastating.
Yeah, Greenwood was completely destroyed. Over 35 city blocks were burned to the ground,
Wow.
and thousands of black residents were left homeless.
The human toll must have been unimaginable.
It was estimates of the death toll ranged from 36 to over 300.
And to think that this happened in the United States of America.
I know, it's a dark chapter in our history,
Absolutely.
but it's a chapter that we need to learn from.
So how did this happen?
Well, there were a lot of factors that contributed to the massacre.
Like what?
Well, for one thing, there was a lot of racial tension in Tulsa at the time.
That makes sense.
Yeah, Greenwood's success had created a lot of resentment among some white Tulsans.
I can imagine.
And that resentment, combined with the already existing racism and prejudice in society, created a powder keg that was just waiting to explode.
And the incident with Roland and Paige was the spark that ignited it.
Exactly. And once the mob started attacking, there was no stopping them.
Like all sense of reason and humanity just went out the window.
Yeah, and the police did very little to stop the violence.
Really?
Yeah, in fact, some accounts suggest that the police actually deputized members of the mob and gave them weapons.
Oh my God, that's horrifying.
It is, and it just shows how deeply ingrained racism was in the institutions of power at the time.
Yeah, the system was clearly rigged against black people.
Absolutely, and the Tulsa Race Massacre is a stark reminder of how fragile progress can be and how quickly things can unravel when hatred and prejudice are allowed to fester.
And it's a reminder of the importance of remembering and honoring the victims of racial violence.
Yes, we must never forget what happened in Tulsa.
Absolutely. So what can we learn from the Tulsa Race Massacre?
Well, I think one of the most important lessons is that racism is a systemic problem,
Meaning?
meaning that it's not just about individual acts of prejudice. It's about the way our institutions and system are set up to benefit some groups at the expense of
Right.
others. And until we address those systemic issues, we will continue to see incidents of racial violence and inequality.
So it's not enough to just be a good person individually. We have to work to dismantle the systems that perpetuate racism.
Exactly. And that's a long and difficult process, but it's a process that we must undertake if we want to create a more just and equitable society.
I couldn't agree more.
And I think another important lesson from Tulsa is the importance of vigilance.
Vigilance, how so?
Well, the massacre happened because people were complacent. They allowed racism and prejudice to go unchecked, and they didn't speak out against injustice.
So we have to be active in fighting against racism.
Yes, we can't just sit back and hope that things will get better on their own. We have to be actively involved in the fight for justice.
That's a powerful message.
It is, and it's a message that's as relevant today as it was 100 years ago.
Absolutely. So what can we do to be more vigilant?
Well, there are a lot of things we can do.
Like what?
Well, for one thing, we can educate ourselves about the history of racism and its ongoing legacy.
Right.
We can also support organizations that are working to fight racism and promote equality.
And we can speak out against injustice whenever we see it.
Exactly. We have to be willing to challenge racism in all its forms, whether it's in our personal lives or in the wider world.
And we have to be willing to have uncomfortable conversations.
Yes, those conversations are essential if we want to move forward as a society.
I couldn't agree more so. Even though the Tulsa Race Massacre was a horrific tragedy, it also serves as a powerful reminder of the importance of fighting for justice and equality.
Absolutely. And it's a reminder that we must never forget the past and that we must always be vigilant in the fight against racism.
And it's a reminder that the fight for justice is ongoing.
It is, and it's a fight that we must all be a part of.
Absolutely. So before we move on from Tulsa, I think it's important to note that the massacre wasn't the only factor that contributed to the decline of black Wall Streets across the country.
Yeah, that's right. There were other forces at play as well.
Like what?
Well, one of the biggest factors was systemic racism.
Can you explain what you mean by that?
Sure. So systemic racism refers to the ways in which racism is embedded in our institutions and systems.
Give me an example.
Sure. So one example is redlining.
Redlining.
Yeah, redlining was a practice that was used by banks and other institutions to deny loans and other services to people who lived in certain neighborhoods.
And these neighborhoods were typically black neighborhoods?
Exactly. And this made it very difficult for black people to buy homes, start businesses, or accumulate wealth.
Wow, so redlining was a major obstacle to black economic progress.
It was, and it's still having an impact today.
Really?
Yeah, many of the neighborhoods that were redlined decades ago are still struggling economically.
That's really disheartening.
It is, but it's important to remember that these systems were created by people,
Me.
meaning that they can be changed by people.
Right.
It's not going to be easy, but we have to keep fighting for a more just and equitable society.
Absolutely. So, in addition to redlining, what were some of the other factors that contributed to the decline of Black Wall Streets?
Well, another major factor was urban renewal.
Urban renewal.
Yeah, so in the mid-20th century, the government started these urban renewal programs that were supposed to revitalize cities.
Okay.
But in reality, these programs often displaced black communities and businesses.
How so?
Well, the government would declare certain neighborhoods to be blighted, and then they would use eminent domain to seize the property.
Eminent domain.
Yeah, that's the government's power to take private property for public use. And once the government had seized the property, they would often demolish the existing buildings and then build new highways or other infrastructure projects.
So these urban renewal programs often ended up displacing Black communities and disrupting their businesses.
Exactly. And this had a devastating impact on many Black Wall Streets.
Wow. So it seems like the government played a role in the decline of Black Wall Streets.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's the case.
And it wasn't just the federal government, right?
No, local governments were often complicit as well.
So Black communities were facing challenges from all sides.
They were, and despite all of these challenges, they still managed to achieve some incredible things.
Yeah, that's what's so inspiring about the story of Black Wall Street.
It is. It's a story of resilience, innovation, and community.
And it's a story that we can all learn from.
Absolutely.
So let's shift gears a bit and talk about some of the other Black Wall Streets that existed across the country.
Okay.
We've talked a lot about Tulsa, but there were so many other communities that were doing amazing things.
That's right.
So let's start with Richmond, Virginia.
Okay.
They had a Black Wall Street called Jackson Ward.
Yeah, Jackson Ward was known as the Harlem of the South.
Wow.
It was a thriving center of Black commerce and culture.
What were some of the key businesses and institutions in Jackson Ward?
Well, they had everything from banks and insurance companies to theaters and nightclubs.
It sounds like it was a really vibrant community.
It was, and it was also a center of Black political activism.
Really?
Yeah, many prominent civil rights leaders got their start in Jackson Ward.
Wow, that's amazing.
It is, and it just shows how important these Black Wall Streets were, not just for economic development, but also for social and political progress.
Absolutely.
And Jackson Ward was also home to the first Black-owned and operated bank in the United States.
Wow, that's incredible. What was it called?
The True Reformers Bank.
The True Reformers Bank.
Yeah, it was founded in 1888 and it was a huge success.
That's so inspiring.
It is, and it just shows what's possible when Black people have the opportunity to control their own economic destinies. So yeah, Jackson Ward was a really special place.
It sounds like it.
It was, and it's a great example of the ingenuity and resilience of the Black community.
All right, so let's move on to another Black Wall Street.
Okay.
How about Durham, North Carolina?
Oh yeah, Durham had a really thriving Black Wall Street called Haiti.
Haiti?
Yeah, it was named after the Haitian Revolution, which was a successful slave revolt that led to the creation of the first Black Republic in the Western Hemisphere.
Wow, that's a powerful name.
It is, and it reflects the spirit of independence and self-determination that was so prevalent in Haiti.
So what made Haiti unique?
Well, for one thing, it was closely tied to the tobacco industry.
The tobacco industry?
Yeah. Durham was a major center of tobacco production, and many of the Black businesses in Haiti were involved in the industry.
I see.
So Haiti really benefited from the economic boom that was happening in Durham at the time.
That makes sense.
Yeah, and it allowed the Black community to accumulate a lot of wealth.
That's great.
It is, but unfortunately, Haiti also faced a lot of challenges.
Like what?
Well, like many other Black Wall Streets, Haiti was targeted by racist policies and practices.
Such as?
Well, redlining was a big problem.
Right.
And so was urban renewal.
Yeah, we talked about those earlier.
Right. And in the 1960s, the city of Durham built a highway that cut right through the heart of Haiti.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it was a devastating blow to the community.
I can imagine.
It physically divided the neighborhood, and it made it much harder for businesses to thrive.
So Haiti was essentially destroyed by the government.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's so sad.
It is, but despite all of the challenges Haiti faced, it still left behind a legacy of resilience and achievement.
Absolutely.
And it's a reminder that even in the face of adversity, Black communities have always found ways to thrive.
Okay, so let's move on to another Black Wall Street.
Okay.
How about Chicago?
Oh, yeah. Chicago had a really vibrant Black Wall Street called Bronzeville.
Bronzeville?
Yeah, it was located on the south side of Chicago, and it was a hub of Black culture and intellectual life.
It sounds like a really special place.
It was, they had theaters, nightclubs, restaurants, businesses of all kinds.
Wow.
And it was also home to some of the most influential Black artists, writers, and musicians of the 20th century.
Like who?
Well, Louis Armstrong lived in Bronzeville for a time.
Oh, wow.
And so did Gwendolyn Brooks.
And she was a Pulitzer Prize winning poet, right?
Yes, she was.
That's incredible.
It is, and there were so many other talented people who lived and worked in Bronzeville.
It sounds like it was a really magical place.
It was, and it was a testament to the creativity and resilience of the Black community.
And what about Atlanta?
Atlanta had a Black Wall Street called Sweet Auburn.
Sweet Auburn.
Yeah, it was named after a street that was lined with auburn-colored trees.
I see.
And it was home to a wide variety of Black businesses, including the insurance company founded by Alonzo Herndon.
Oh, wow. And he was one of the wealthiest Black men in America at the time, right?
That's right.
That's amazing.
It is. And his story is a great example of the entrepreneurial spirit that was so prevalent in Black Wall Streets. And Sweet Auburn was also the birthplace of Martin Luther King Jr.
Wow.
Yeah, he grew up in Sweet Auburn, and his childhood home is now a National Historic Site.
That's really cool.
It is, and it just shows how important these Black Wall Streets were, not just for economic development, but also for social and political change.
Yeah, they were really incubators for Black excellence.
Exactly.
So we've talked about Black Wall Streets in Richmond, Durham, Chicago, and Atlanta, but there are many others all across the country.
That's right.
And each one of these communities had its own unique story to tell.
They did.
They all shared a common thread.
And what was that?
They were all built on the principles of Black self-sufficiency, economic empowerment, and community solidarity.
Exactly.
And they were all testaments to the resilience and ingenuity of the Black community.
Absolutely.
So even though many of these Black Wall Streets faced setbacks over time, their legacy continues to inspire us today.
It does.
And it reminds us that we can achieve great things when we work together and support each other. All right, so we've covered a lot of ground in this deep dive.
We have.
We've talked about the history of Black Wall Streets, the factors that led to their rise and decline, and the inspiring revitalization efforts that are happening today.
Right.
But I think it's important to end on a note of hope.
I agree.
Because even though Black Wall Streets faced many challenges, their story is ultimately a story of triumph.
It is.
It's a story of Black people overcoming adversity and achieving great things against all odds.
Absolutely.
And it's a story that continues to inspire us today.
It does.
So let's all continue to learn from the legacy of Black Wall Street, and let's work together to create a more just and equitable society for all.
I'm with you on that.
All right, so we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in a moment to continue our discussion.
Sounds good. Welcome back, everyone.
So before the break, we were talking about all these different Black Wall Streets across the country.
Right.
And it's really amazing to see how these communities were able to thrive despite all the challenges they faced.
Yeah, it really is a testament to their resilience and ingenuity.
Absolutely. So I'm curious to know more about the organizations that are working to carry on the legacy of Black Wall Street today.
Yeah, there are some really great organizations out there that are doing some amazing work.
Like who?
Well, one that comes to mind is the Black Wall Street Chamber of Commerce.
Okay.
They're based in Tulsa, and they're really focused on supporting Black-owned businesses and promoting economic development in the Greenwood District.
That's great.
Yeah, they offer a variety of programs and services to help Black entrepreneurs succeed.
Like what?
Well, they have things like business training workshops, networking events, and access to capital.
Wow, so they're really providing a comprehensive support system for Black businesses?
Exactly, and they're also working to revitalize the Greenwood District itself.
How so?
Well, they're involved in a number of projects, including the development of a new business incubator and the creation of a cultural heritage center.
That's really cool.
Yeah, it's all about preserving the history of Black Wall Street while also creating new opportunities for the future.
I love that.
Yeah. And there are other organizations that are doing similar work all across the country.
Like who?
Well, there's the National Black Chamber of Commerce, which is a national organization that advocates for Black businesses.
Okay.
And there's also the Association for the Study of African American Life and History, which is a scholarly organization that promotes the study and preservation of Black history and culture.
Those all sound like great organizations.
They are, and I think they're all playing a vital role in keeping the legacy of Black Wall Street alive.
Absolutely. So what can we learn from Black Wall Street as we think about the challenges and opportunities facing our own communities today?
Well, I think one of the most important lessons is the importance of economic empowerment.
Right.
Black Wall Streets were successful because they created their own economies.
Yeah, they didn't wait for someone else to give them opportunities. They created their own.
Exactly. And I think that's a really important lesson for us today, especially given the ongoing economic disparities that we see in our society.
Yeah. I mean, Black communities are still disproportionately affected by poverty and unemployment.
Right. And I think part of the solution is to create more opportunities for Black entrepreneurship and economic development.
And that's something that we can all do in our own communities.
Absolutely. We can support Black-owned businesses, we can invest in Black communities, and we can advocate for policies that promote economic justice.
That's a great point.
And I think another important lesson from Black Wall Street is the power of community.
Community?
Yeah, Black Wall Streets were built on a strong sense of community.
Yeah, everyone worked together to support each other.
Exactly. And I think that's something that we've lost a bit in our society today.
Yeah, we're so individualistic.
Right. And I think we need to find ways to rebuild that sense of community.
I agree.
Because when we come together and support each other, we can accomplish amazing things.
Absolutely. So let's all try to be more intentional about building community in our own life.
I'm with you on that.
All right. So we've talked a lot about the legacy of Black Wall Street and the lessons we can learn from it.
Right.
But I want to shift gears a bit and talk about revitalization.
Revitalism.
Yeah. I mean, what does it mean to revitalize a community?
That's a great question, and I think it's a question that a lot of communities are grappling with today, especially communities that have been historically disinvested in.
Yeah, like many of the Black communities that were home to Black Wall Streets.
Exactly.
So what does revitalization look like in practice?
Well, I think it starts with listening to the community.
Listening to the community.
Yeah, I mean, we can't come in with our own preconceived notions of what a community needs.
Right, we have to actually listen to the people who live there and understand their hopes and dreams for their community.
Exactly. And then we have to work together to develop a plan that meets those needs.
So it's a collaborative
It
process.
has to be.
And it's not just about physical development, right?
No, it's also about economic development, social development, and cultural
So
development.
it's a holistic approach.
Exactly. And it's about creating a community that is sustainable and equitable for all.
And I think that's what Black Wall Street was all about.
Yeah, it was about creating a community where Black people could thrive and prosper.
And that's a legacy that we can all carry forward.
Absolutely.
All right, so we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll continue our discussion about revitalization and how we can apply the lessons of Black Wall Street to our own communities.
Sounds good.
And we're back.
Yeah.
So before the break, we were talking about revitalization, and
Right.
I think that's a really important topic, especially as we think about the future of our own communities here in Deer Park, LaPorte, and Pasadena.
Absolutely.
We're seeing a lot of growth and development in our area,
Yeah.
but it's important to make sure that that growth is equitable and benefits everyone.
Right, revitalization can't just be about building new buildings or attracting new businesses.
Right, it has to be about people.
Yeah, it has to be about creating opportunities for everyone, especially those who have been historically marginalized or excluded.
So how do we do that?
Well, I think it starts with listening to the community. I
Yeah.
mean, we can't come in with our own preconceived notions of what a community needs. We
Right.
have to actually listen to the people who live there and understand their hopes and dreams for their community.
So it's about community engagement,
Yeah,
and
exactly.
it's about making sure that everyone has a seat at the table.
Absolutely.
And once we understand the community's needs, then we can start to develop a plan for revitalization.
Right.
But that plan has to be holistic.
Yeah, it can't just focus on one aspect of the community.
Yeah.
It has to address the economic, social, and cultural needs of the community.
And it has to be sustainable. I
Absolutely.
mean, we don't want to just create a temporary boom that fizzles out in a few years.
Yeah, right. We want to create a community that is thriving and vibrant for generations to come.
So what are some of the key principles of sustainable revitalization?
Well, I think one of the most important principles is community ownership.
Community ownership.
Yeah, I mean, the community has to be involved in every step of the process.
Right, they have to have a say in what happens in their community, and
Exactly.
they have to feel like they have a stake in the outcome.
Absolutely.
And another important principle is equity.
Equity.
Yeah, I mean, we have to make sure that the benefits of revitalization are shared by everyone in the community.
Right, we can't just focus on helping the wealthy or the privileged.
We have to make sure that everyone has the opportunity to thrive.
Exactly. And that includes people of color, low-income families, and other marginalized groups.
And another important principle is sustainability.
Sustainability.
Yeah, I mean, we have to make sure that the revitalization efforts are environmentally sustainable.
Right. We can't just build a bunch of new buildings without thinking about the impact on the environment.
And we also have to make sure that the revitalization efforts are economically sustainable.
Right. We don't want to create a community that is dependent on outside investment.
We want to create a community that is self-sufficient and can support itself over the long term.
Absolutely.
So those are just a few of the key principles of sustainable revitalization.
Right. And I think they're all really important.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think they're all principles that were embodied in Black Wall Streets.
Yeah, I mean, Black Wall Streets were all about community ownership, equity, and sustainability. So I
Exactly.
think there's a lot that we can learn from Black Wall Streets as we think about how to revitalize our own communities.
Absolutely.
So I think that's a good place to wrap up our discussion.
Yeah, I think so too.
We've covered a lot of ground today,
We have.
but I hope you found it informative and inspiring.
I
And
did.
I hope it's given you some food for thought as you think about the future of your own community.
Me too.
So thanks for joining us on this deep dive into the legacy of Black Wall Street.
It was my pleasure.
And remember, if you want to learn more about Black Wall Street or about revitalization efforts in your own community, you can visit our website at thinkandactlocally.com.
And you can also make a donation to support our work at thinkandactlocally.com. Donate.
We appreciate your support.
We do.
So until next time, keep thinking and acting locally.
See you then.